This is Vatican Radio and I am Lydia O'Kane. A conference looking at the career of Irish leader Hugh O'Neill opens this Friday morning at the British School here in Rome. Hugh O'Neill led the Irish resistance to the English conquest of Ireland at the time of Queen Elizabeth I at the end of the 16th century. The conflict, known as the 9 Years' War, took place in Ireland from 1594 to 1603 and was fought mainly in the northern province of Ulster, although there was also conflict in other parts of the country. The war ended in defeat for O'Neill and other Irish leaders, which led to their exile in what was called the Flight of the Earls. One of the organisers and speakers at the conference is Dr. Hiram Morgan from the University College Cork. He spoke to me about this dominant figure in Irish history.
Hugh O'Neill led the Irish resistance to the English conquest of Ireland at the end of the 16th century, when England, of course, had become a leading Protestant power led by Queen Elizabeth. And O'Neill ended up leading the Irish resistance to that movement, starting off by fighting a war in his home territories of Ulster and then extending a war to the whole of Ireland. And it became quite an epic struggle, which eventually involves the Spaniards intervening in Ireland to try and assist the Irish against the English. So it's also part of a longer war between England and Spain, which began, of course, with the Spanish Armada.
Your paper at this conference, you bring a papal influence into it. Talk to us about Hugh O'Neill with regard to the papacy and with regard to the Pope at the time.
Well, Hugh O'Neill's relations with Rome were not well established because Ulster was very remote from Italy and from papal control at this time. So even though Ulster was still a Catholic province of Ireland, it was quite cut off from Italy, and contacts were quite limited. But in fact, Ulster was actually the only province of Ireland which, for instance, had adopted the new calendar of Pope Gregory. So actually, it was the only part of the British Isles which had adopted that calendar. So it was quite a Catholic place. But the problem was that at this time, the resistance to Queen Elizabeth was really being led by Spain. And the popes at this time, in fact, wanted to disengage from Spanish control. And that is one of the major problems. O'Neill was in alliance with the Spaniards, but unfortunately the popes wanted to disengage from Spanish control because the Spaniards were basically telling the popes what to do at the end of the 16th century. And this is really because from about 1560, the power of the French had collapsed in Europe. So the popes really needed France to become a more important country again. And by the 1590s, France was becoming a more important country because its civil wars had ended and its king had changed his religion to Catholicism. So consequently, the popes are moving towards France when O'Neill is allied with Spain. And that's a major problem for O'Neill, in that the popes are quite reluctant to support him because he's in alliance with Spain. So that is a difficulty. And also at this time, the popes had mistakenly believed that Queen Elizabeth would be replaced by James I. But they also thought that James I would become a Catholic. Because his mother was Mary, Queen of Scots, a famous Catholic martyr, they thought mistakenly that James would also become a Catholic. And this was because James sent out messengers to basically confuse the Pope. Because the French king had changed his religion, the popes had this mistaken belief, unfortunately, that James would also change his religion. But that certainly didn't happen.
So the popes, in a sense, were hedging their bets.
Absolutely. Well, this is because the popes were then a political power. They controlled the centre of Italy. So they were not only a spiritual power, but they were a political power. And they didn't want to be dominated by either side. They wanted to be independent. And the only reason why they were cozying up with the French was simply because they wanted to balance Spanish power. Whereas the Spaniards want the popes to transfer the control of Ireland from England to Spain or to a Spanish candidate. And this is because under the famous Bull of Laudabiliter, in the 12th century, Pope Adrian had given Ireland to the English, to the Henry II, which had facilitated the Norman conquest of Ireland. But of course, England in due course became a heretical country, especially at the Reformation. So everybody thought, well, now that prescription can be changed, but certainly the popes don't want to change it in favour of Spain. So that is the problem.
Even though they thought that Elizabeth would go and there would be a Catholic monarch, I mean, how did they view... They obviously must have viewed Elizabeth's rise and her power with some trepidation.
Oh, absolutely. Like, they had excommunicated Queen Elizabeth, and then they had sent papal forces to Ireland in 1580. And then they had supported the Spanish Armada. But in the 1590s, because France is on the rise, they have an opportunity to change back to a more neutral policy. So, but the whole problem is that they don't want to antagonise the English in case there's a possibility of a Catholic revival. And particularly they don't want to antagonise the English in Ireland, who dominate the towns in Ireland. And one of the things is O'Neill and the Spaniards want the popes to excommunicate those people who aren't supporting his war in Ireland. And unfortunately, from the Irish point of view, or from O'Neill's point of view, the popes are unwilling to do that.
Coming back to Hugh O'Neill himself, and Rome is a very interesting place. It obviously has the seat of, it's the Holy See, it's the Pope. But you also had, at this time, you had, for instance, it's just been celebrated the 400th anniversary of Shakespeare's death. He wrote a lot, and there was a big conference here on as well about Shakespeare and his Roman plays. So looking at the city of Rome, Hugh O'Neill came to Rome. Tell us about that. Tell us about the importance of the city at that time and why he came.
Well, he came to Rome because essentially by that stage he lost his war in Ireland. And by that stage the Spaniards were then had made peace with England in 1604. And at that point the Spaniards didn't want O'Neill anymore when he arrived in their territories in 1607. So basically they sent him off to Rome to get him out of the way. But O'Neill arrives here in Rome, which is, of course, the centre of the Catholic world. And he was well known in Rome because his war had been publicised in Rome in the 1590s. A man down, a printer down near the Pantheon, had published his victories. A man called Bernardino Beccari had published O'Neill's, publicised these great victories he was winning on behalf of Catholicism. So he was well known in Rome. He was received regally in Rome in 1608, when he arrived here in the spring of 1608, the cardinals arrived. He came through the Porta del Popolo and he gets visits all the major churches in Rome and sees the Pope, of course, and then witnesses the canonization of Santa Francesco Romano. And it's at that point that we have, as a result, his painting in the Vatican, because he is depicted at this canonization of Santa Francesco Romano in May 1608. So his arrival there is a great honour for the Irish, because at this point at the, I think it's the feast of, when the Eucharist is displayed and the Pope is brought round Rome under a canopy. Generally the foreign ambassadors carried the canopy, but at this, on this occasion, the Irish earls were allowed to carry the canopy for the Pope. So that was a great honour. And also at this time, significantly, O'Neill goes and interviews the new French ambassador. So he's also hedging his bets, but by this stage it is too late. And he remains another 8 years in Rome, living in somewhat penury, really, because the Spaniards' pensions come through quite late and the Pope isn't really interested in O'Neill, because the Pope hopes that James will be nice to Catholics in Ireland and England, which is not always the case.
What do you think Hugh O'Neill's legacy is, and do you think people in, certainly in Ireland, know enough about him, or has a kind of a part of history that's kind of been forgotten?
Well, it's a part of history that's now lost, because of course he's a Gaelic aristocrat and Ireland is a democratic republican country now, and it's a very different Ireland that, like, for instance, we're commemorating the the 1916 rebellion this year in Ireland, the 100th anniversary of that, Roland O'Neill's death in Rome. And the significance is that O'Neill lost his war of liberation, and it took another 300 years, and a very different Ireland emerged, which was a democratic Ireland, and also one, because O'Neill had failed so completely in Ulster, it was one where most of Ulster is in fact not included in the new Ireland, because that Ulster, because of O'Neill's failure, is planted by Scots and English settlers. So O'Neill's failure is quite dramatic in a sense on subsequent Irish history, and what emerges is very different from what he envisages.
Now, this conference, it's taking place in Rome. We've been just talking about Rome. What is, do you think, the objective of the conference? Is it to really look at Hugh O'Neill in a new light? Is it to bring his attention back to Hugh O'Neill? What was your objective when you wanted to organise this conference?
I think essentially, as you said, to bring him back into a new light and into bring the more recent research to bear about his military tactics, his political tactics. Like, he's a great military innovator. The French king describes him as the third most important soldier of his day. And the Irish would think more highly of him than that, of course, but that was quite a high regard from the French king. And his politics, he's a great political manoeuvrer in alliance with a man called Red Hugh O'Donnell, where one plays hard cop and the other plays soft cop too, in negotiating with the English. So he's quite a Machiavellian figure as well. And he is really a very devious politician, and people are... the Catholic clerics he works with describe him as a politic, somebody who makes political judgments and will use religion and whatever for his own ends. So he's a very clever politician. And I suppose you could say he gets his comeuppance in the end.